Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. That's us, Inside Outdoors.
That's us, Inside Outdoors, with old Buddy Bill here this morning.
And this is Don Jordan.
Oh, I knew that.
I'm here, too.
Yeah, he's here. He was here last week, too. He come in out of the sunny south.
Yeah, boy, that was a little early.
And he come in. Well, I asked him last week, I said, "What in the world are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, I had to come home." I said, "Well, you should have waited a week or two." Yeah, I think you ought to wait a little longer than that after this morning. But anyway, we got Rich in there on. Where's he? Where'd he go? Oh, there he is. He's in there anyway. And
well, did you hear that noise? It sounded like a fan.
Yeah. What was that?
I had to turn that off. Well, I didn't know, but I just found the mixer had a couple of buttons up on it that shouldn't have been there. So anyway.
Mixing pancakes this morning, I guess.
Hey, it's 21 degrees out there. What do you think,
guys? Yeah, when I come through Jackson Creek Pass, it was 22.
Well,
yeah,
it's a little cooler downtown then.
Well, must be, yeah.
Although it's supposed to be beautiful the next couple days.
Oh, yeah, it's supposed to warm back up. And
high of 50 today, 61 tomorrow.
You know, let's see, who was it? There's somebody. Oh, Jeff Mitchell stopped by the day before yesterday. And I said, "You know, I'd like to see about 2 or 3 foot of snow." And he looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, "No." I said, "Now's the time to get snow. Don't last long."
Right. That's true.
And we need the snow.
Yeah.
Well, we need the nitrogen. But
I keep everybody home from getting the coronavirus.
Oh, ain't that something? I don't know what to think of it, you know.
Well, we're going to find out.
Boy, I hope not. I hope we don't find out.
Well, if it find out it's not as bad as we thought, that'd be great.
Well, that'd be wonderful.
But it seems to be growing.
Yeah. Well, people, you know,
right here in Bloomington, we're in kind of a international travel hub right here.
Yeah, with do the IU, yeah.
And it's spring break this week.
Uh-huh, and then they'll bring it back.
Well, let's hope they don't.
Well, let's hope
they
not.
They say the chances are fairly good.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, yes. And,
well, I have a good friend that went out to last week to Seattle. I had to fly out there, so I've been giving him some grief about that.
Yeah, that's the wrong place to go right now.
I hope you didn't kiss him when he got back.
No. I told him I was going to wear a hazmat suit next time I saw him.
Yeah, you better.
Speaking of hazmat suits, I gotta say something about these masks that they're all wearing.
Well, now, what good is it?
They're good whatsoever. Nothing but a psychological make you feel better about it.
If there's a germ comes by, you're going to get it. I don't care how many masks you got on.
You got that mask on, you know, there's moisture gathering in the mask as you breathe,
right,
which would make a perfect place for these viruses, nice and warm, damp, you know.
Damp.
And a virus is not going to get filtered out by a piece of gauze anyway. So it makes zero sense. And they're selling these things for like $40.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know? It's just outrageous.
One place I heard on there on the nose, on the news, that's the news, and they had gouged the price up to $200.
Oh, man. It's just,
that was on the news yesterday.
It's
ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Imagine what they're going to get for the vaccine when it comes along, if they're getting $200 for a do-good-nothing mask.
Yeah. Well, you can take a big old red handkerchief and put it right tie around your neck or face and do the same thing.
Yeah, you get just as bad of a result as you would with a $200 mask.
Well, you know, what ticked me off is we're going to keep it out of the United States. Oh, we're going to watch it. We're going to do this, going to do that, and then they ship them all over here.
Well,
they take them off them ships and stuff and brings them over here to the Army.
Hey, where do you think they made those things, too?
China.
Yeah.
And right. They can't produce them fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And
they probably make them right there in Wuhan or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Where they come from.
They're already filled.
Get your official Wuhan mask.
Yeah, they're already filled with germs, so no problem.
We are kidding, though, but there is no, what do you call it? Not antidote, but. A vaccine for it.
Vaccine
not
for
yet.
It, no.
It's going to take 12 months.
Well, yeah. It's going to take a while, yeah.
It'll be over by the time they get the vaccine.
And you wonder where this virus started.
Well, you know, I heard a nasty rumor. I don't know.
Let's hear it.
Well, that the Chinese were weaponizing this stuff and that it got out.
I believe it. And, I do. I honestly do believe that.
Well, that's what I heard.
I've said the same thing all along.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you another story. Yeah. I was talking to a Uber driver.
Uber.
And he picked Uber or whoever he is.
I like that.
He sells Mazdas.
Uber driver.
But anyway, he was sitting down there at the house where he was sitting. We were sitting there one evening talking, and he says, you know, he said, I pick up a lot of foreign dignitaries and people, he said, from the airport and stuff, and take them and drive them to where they're going and things. And he said, I picked up a couple, he said two, a couple, and I don't know, they was from foreign countries. And he said, I heard them talking in the back seat, and he said, as I was driving. And now this has been probably 6 months ago now that he was telling me this. And he was talking back and forth and said, sometime this year, and they didn't say a specific time, that the United States would be in a recession. And I thought, well, now how in the world do they know that? And why? I mean, these are foreign people. Now, they may have been from China. They may have been, I don't know where they's from. But predicting there's going to be a recession in the United States, well, this virus comes along. Now, you take it from there, buddy.
Well, everybody.
Yeah, you take it from there.
Everybody's been predicting a recession for the last 2 or 3 years.
Well,
so that's,
and this virus comes along and everything's slowing down. Look what the stock market's done, and of course that stock market. I don't have a whole lot of faith in the stock market anymore. But
well, I don't know what to think about it. If the Chinese actually did this, which is possible, I guess, you know. I mean,
I wouldn't say that they done it per se, but somebody has.
They are our number one biggest competitor on the world market today.
Well, I think the one thing about it is that the media is hyping it.
Absolutely.
Way out of proportion, in my opinion.
Well, but
the first and only story.
They always do.
But listen to this. I mean, here's a big one. And that is they canceled the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin.
Yeah, I've seen that on news.
And that's like, it's not just the festival itself that you know that loses out the ticket money, but there's, $1 billion comes into that town with all the people that travel there to see it and stay there and everything else. So and they're also talking about, you know, being worried about, sporting events and things like that.
Oh, I'd say that sporting events, the March Madness coming up with all those people in those field houses has to be fairly iffy. But they're talking about playing before no crowd, and I can't see that happening. You talk about losing money. I don't believe the NC2A wants to lose that much money.
I don't think so either, bud.
So we're going to have that, and
Well, let's just hope it doesn't spread any more than it is, which it's going to. I mean, you know, that's just
well. The good thing is it's only people our age, Bill, that really have to worry about this.
Well,
young people don't get it or get a very weak case of it.
And if you have a health problem, you're really in trouble.
Yeah,
it certainly has been attacking the older folks.
Uh-huh, right.
Yes, that one nursing home out there, I wouldn't want to get within 10 miles of that place.
No, wouldn't you, though?
8 people dead in there already.
Well, I'm a little nervous because my mom is in assisted living now.
Oh, that's
living
right. I forgot about that.
A few hundred people. So who knows what will happen.
Yeah, who knows? That's exactly right.
I think there was one in Michigan that got sort of, they've been putting them, it's almost like martial law. You just stay where you are and don't move. We'll feed you, but you're not going anywhere. Interesting.
Well, you know, it may be the thing to do. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to find out.
I think
it will run its course.
When they bring them people over there, they act like them germs is going to stay with that person. Well, them germs ain't going to stay with that person.
Well,
they're going to fly around. They're going to move around.
Fortunately, we got Mike Pence on the case.
Oh, man.
Brother.
He's the head of the department that's going to fix this whole thing.
Yes,
so you can rest easy tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the fellow that was responsible for not having the needle exchange program for an extra 2 years.
Right.
They want to get rid of that again now. They've decided they would extend it for a year. But you know, it sounds to me like that's going to be an ongoing problem.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have not a very good government doing the job.
No, they're lacking a little bit.
They're lacking quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know what? You're going to be lacking if you don't have a hunter education course.
I've got one, but go ahead and tell me.
Well, you're going to be lacking hunting in turkey season. Coming up next month.
Oh, well, it's a certain age, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Anybody born after, 86?
I don't know what the...
Has to have it or something like
date
that.
Date is now. Let's see.
We 84?
I got a list of DNR hunter education courses here.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, we only have one listed, and that's at... Rochester, Indiana, way up north.
Oh, yeah.
You can drive up there to get one.
Holy cow. You can take them on the internet, can't you?
If you're internet-wise
and got an internet.
I don't know.
I think you can. I don't know. Somebody said they could.
Well,
I've got mine.
I got mine in my old dog tags from the U.S. Army.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's all you need.
That's all you need?
Yeah. If you served in the U.S. Army, you don't need a...
Uh-huh.
Or Marines.
Or Marines, or...
As long as you've qualified on a weapon.
Right.
And, anyway. So, if you want to go to Rochester, you can get your hunter education course up there. Otherwise, you're going to have to get a hold of the DNR and find out where you can go for one.
Turkey season comes in, April 26th, is it? 24th, 26th?
I can tell you in a flash here.
You're going to tell me in a flash.
Yes. Youth spring turkey hunting, April 18th and 19th.
Uh-huh.
Spring season, April 22nd to May 10th.
22nd. I was off just a little bit there. So remember, turkey season is April 22nd.
To May the 10th.
And if you was born after 84, 6, I forget which it is, you need a hunter's education course. So you better be getting one of those. And you're going to need it anyway. You never know when you're going to be. I think I told a story one time. We always go out west hunting, you know, or used to, three or four of us. And when we was out there at one particular time, guy come along and offered to take me and another guy or whoever wanted to go hunting up in the Tetons.
Uh-huh.
And I thought about it, and he was going moose hunting is what he was doing, and we was just going to go along, you know, just for the fun of it, more or less, just to say we go in. And I decided I wouldn't go, and one of the other boys that was with us, he said he was going to go, so he went. Come back, and he said, boy, he said, tell you what, he said, it's a good thing I had my hunter education course. I said, how's that? He said, you can't get in the gate if you don't have it. And I said, well, it's a good thing I stayed home because I'd have been in a motel somewhere. Because I didn't, at that particular time, that's been several years ago, I didn't have mine. And boy, I come back, and as soon as one come available, I took it and got my card because you never know. I mean, just like that, I wasn't expecting an offer to go moose hunting up in the Tetons. But like I said, it's a good thing I backed out. Because it was snowing, and they was going to sleep in a tent, and cold.
Boy, doesn't that sound like fun,
oh,
Bill?
Oh, man, it did then. It did back then. Didn't pay much attention to it. That's been several years ago. Never paid a bit of attention to it. Boy, now, no. I'll stay down there at that motel.
Where's that electric blanket?
Yeah. No, you really need to get a hunter. If you're a hunter, you need to get it. Regardless.
Well, that's true. So get your hunter education course, and you better call the local DNR and see if what we got down this part of the woods.
It's Rex Waters generally takes care of that.
I know
he's generally the head of it, and call down there and talk to Rex and see. I haven't talked to Rex for a while. He's thinking about retiring here in a
I would think he's
short
about
time.
Getting about that age.
I don't know when, but... well, of course, wintertime, he's busy, and I'm not out. And, of course, duck season, you know, he's busy with it in the fall.
Speaking of things DNR-wise, you looking for a job, Bill?
No, ma'am.
Well, if you are looking for a job.
No, sir.
If somebody else out there is looking for a job.
Are they?
John out in Owen County might...
Hey, John, hey, there's your job.
Here's the job. Now hiring Indiana DNR Division of Law Enforcement.
Law Enforcement.
You want to be a green bear? This is your chance. Benefits offered.
Oh, man.
Comprehensive medical, dental, and vision. Paid vacation. Holidays, personal and comp time. Paid retirement. Take home vehicle, so you get to take home your
your
car. Specialties offered, you get to do investigations, scuba diving, canine units, river rescue, cave rescue, sonar. You get to use sonar.
You get to use a lot of things.
Airboat operator, unmanned aerial vehicles, honor guard, public information officer, field training officer, and instructor are all the things you can do. It doesn't say anything about police work here, but we know that that's what they do.
They're an officer of all descriptions.
You get on your scuba outfit, Bill, and we'll come back in just a minute because we got to go to a break.
Okay, don't go away, folks. We'll be back with the same old stuff.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break.
You're listening to WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And as we just said a little bit ago, it is 21 degrees right now downtown Bloomington. Going to be beautiful, though, today. High of 50. Sunday looks like 61 and sunny. So a couple of sunny nice days, then slight chance of showers for the rest of the week through Monday through Wednesday. But still pretty warm temperatures up towards 60 degrees. So that's it for us. We'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors shortly. All right, we're back.
Oh, we're back already. Hey, well, I told you we'd be right back.
And real quick, why don't we open up these phone lines at 812-323-1200.
Okay.
In case John wants to call in or anybody
back,
else.
I don't know John, so. This morning. Is he not out of bed, you reckon?
Well, I don't know.
Well,
it's cold this morning. He's probably in there behind the stove keeping warm.
That's what he's doing, I bet.
I bet that is. He's firing her up with wood right now.
Hiding from coronavirus.
Yeah, he's hiding. Yeah, well, I don't blame him for that. I can't blame him for that.
Say, you know, before the show, we were talking about the Hoosier Invitational Bass Fishing Tournament.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I hadn't heard.
I think that was 72 when they had the first one down there that had 472 boats in it.
Well, they...
I'm pretty sure it was 72.
About every year there for a long time they had way over the limit.
Well, they didn't have a limit.
They had to turn them. Well, they eventually got a limit.
The DNR forced a limit on them because they had a couple of wrecks that very first year.
Yeah. And you take 400 boats on the lake. I mean, that's
all of them heading towards that pinch at 50 miles an hour. Well, one guy went right up in the woods. You know, you remember that?
Well, he was going to squirrel hunt.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I know you could go over there at the, you know, where that pinch is and go up there where that boat wrecked and find bass fishing plugs all through the woods up in there.
Where it threw them out?
Yeah. And tore the boat up pretty bad, too.
Oh,
anyway,
The
IU Bass Fishing Club is now involved and apparently somewhat sponsoring. It's now called the annual Four Winds Hoosier Invitational, and that's a bass fishing tournament, and that's going to be March the 29th, 2020, from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Four Winds Ramp. You got to enter through the Fairfax Gate up there to go into it. It says $120 per team. Woo! Includes entry and big bass 80% payout. So they're going to pay out 80% of the money, they say. And join us Saturday night at Windjammer Bar and Grill for food and drinks.
Ooh.
They're going to have a party afterwards.
They're going to have a party. Oh, let's have a party.
So it's hosted by the Indiana University Bass Fishing Club, which we mentioned earlier is that, you know, it's a big outfit. They've got official uniforms and jumpsuits and look like racing suits, you know.
I forget how many Big Ten teams, not just Big Ten teams, but
all over.
Right. I forget how many are in that now. And as I was mentioning there before, Steve Lutz from over in Illinois, of course, he was working here. He was a substitute teacher. Or was a teacher. I don't know. He may have been just substitute. But anyway, he was a big organizer of that. And in fact, I got to talk to him last year at one of the Big Ten one of IU's tournaments. And I don't remember what year it was. You said
72 was 70. The first one for the Hoosier Bassmasters sponsor.
Well, yeah. Now, when was – I don't remember when IU formed their first but anyway, it doesn't make any difference. Steve come to me, and of course we had the bait shop at the time, and wanted me to more or less be a sponsor of it and get it started, help get it started. And he is actually the one that started it. And IU was really the first one, I guess, that started. I've got a lot. Steve gave me a bunch of information, and I'll look at. I didn't think this was going to come up this morning, or I'd have brought it, and maybe it'll tell us a little more information. But anyway, they started out with they fished for the old bucket, a minnow bucket, and I furnished a minnow bucket, of course, and it had the names of it on there and all my name and IU. But somebody borrowed the minnow bucket a few years later, and we ain't found it yet.
Was that a metal?
That was a metal one, the old minnow bucket.
With one with the float in the top of it?
No, it didn't have the float. It was just the old-fashioned minnow bucket.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
So anyway, That's how it got started. And like I say, he left me a bunch of information about the Bass Club and stuff, and I'll look that up and see, and maybe tell us some more next week. I can give him more information on it. But
they've got quite a few guys, and they sell apparel. They sell IU Bass Fishing Club t-shirts.
They had, last year when they had the tournament down here at Lake, they had t-shirts and hats and stuff like a little bit of everything.
They're in the merchandise business.
And I think maybe Purdue was the second one to form a team. I'll have to read up on it and see and make sure.
But, you remember that ice fishing tournament that Purdue and IU had?
Gosh, I don't know.
Yeah, and at the end of the tournament, IU won, and the Purdue guys didn't have any fish. And they were talking afterward, and they said, "Well, what's the problem?" He said, "Well, we got our boat out there on the ice, and we couldn't find a place to fish." I said, "Well, you got to drill a hole in the ice." They were just casting out on the ice,
and they wasn't doing a bit of good, was
they? They weren't catching any.
I'll be.
Purdue team.
And they got beat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand why. You got to drill a hole.
Yeah, you have to have some water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, getting your boat on the ice, that's a whole nother story, right?
Yeah, that would be another story. Oh, mercy.
Well, at least there's no ice right now, although there could be this morning, a little skiff of ice.
There could be a little skiff of ice here and there, but it's sure. Boy, we've not had any real ice fishing for quite a while.
No,
really? We ain't had none this year.
There was one ice fishing mishap up in northern
Well,
Indiana,
now up north they might have
earlier
had some
this year. But it's kind of a dangerous sport.
Yes, it is.
Especially here where we don't always have a good ice.
Well, and then you get them springs that's under the water and in the
current.
Currents, there again, and that keeps it from freezing very deep, and you step in one of them, and whoopee, you're gone.
Well, you never want to go ice fishing by yourself.
No.
Of course, if your buddy goes out and tries to save you, then you got two dead guys.
You got two dead guys, yeah. But anyway.
It's a dangerous sport.
It's dangerous. Tie a rope to a tree and around you and out there. And
get a long rope.
Tie it to your truck. They make long ropes,
You get those autonomous vehicles, you'll be able to, after you fall in, you can start up your truck and have it drive out and get you.
Yeah, there you go. Have pontoons on it, yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Boy, Rich is, no, he's not saying much on this, is he?
Well, he's not an ice fisherman.
He's never wanted to go out on the ice and fish, ever.
Oh, it's fun, really. It is.
I never did it.
Two or three, a couple of your buddies or something, and you can go out there and you can have a ball.
But see, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so we had running streams everywhere. We didn't have too many ponds or.
Oh, they have the temperatures for it. Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it would be cold enough too. Yeah, but there wasn't a lot of places to do it.
Ice fishing. Well, I lived in northern Wisconsin for a while, a long time, and they're definitely into ice fishing up there. And although they don't call it ice fishing, they call it ice drinking.
Ice drinking.
Yes, you can tell how good they're doing by how many
beer cans.
Empty Pabst Blue Ribbon cans there are outside of their tent.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they all have shelters. It's cold up there. And you sit in there in your tent with your battery-operated TV and your kerosene heater with the tent flap open so you can look out and watch your tip-ups out in the field of vision there, and then when one pops up, everybody races out to it, and the first one that gets there gets the fish,
yeah.
So there's a
contest going on there.
Which can be quite brutal sometimes.
Especially after a few buttons. blue ribbons.
Yeah, PBRs, easier.
After a few of them, it could get dangerous.
Yeah, I believe people have been hurt. And in any case, ice fishing season's over. I don't know whether you've been watching the Inside Outdoors Facebook page, but people all over the place are showing mushroom pictures. Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee.
Missouri is not.
Georgia.
They don't have them in Missouri yet.
Well, they might. They got them in Tennessee now. So
I doubt if they got them in Tennessee. I think somebody's pulling your leg.
They've been reporting them now for a week.
They may have growed them in a hothouse or something. But
well, the guy from Kentucky said the ground temps were the right temperature, and it'll be an early season this year. So we'll see.
Gosh, they've had bad weather down in there.
Well, apparently not that bad.
And Missouri, we always find mushrooms in Missouri, turkey season.
Uh-huh. Well.
And that's another three or 4 weeks away.
Well, if it's early, it'll be sooner than that.
I don't know. Man. They may. That may have been last year. So
and I know that Georgia has morels up.
Well, they possibly could.
I know possibly. They do. And Florida does too, but the thing about morels in Florida is they only have about a 3-day season.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know, they come up and it gets hot and they're gone.
Gone, hell yeah.
So Florida season's probably over. Mm. But like I said, I know Georgia and other people are reporting. I'm ready for them. I'm going this year.
Are you going?
I'm going. I got my back all fixed up.
Good.
I'm going to hike up to where the Forest Service and the DNR has clear-cut all my mushroom patches and see if there's any left.
Well, they could be and they could not be.
Well,
you don't know.
Last time I checked, they were not.
But yeah.
Maybe they're now.
Sometimes the first year or so after they clear cut like that, there's mushrooms, and after that there's scarcely none.
Well,
but you never know.
There's other places to try, but unfortunately these are places I know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I got a buddy with some land over in Greene County who finds them in his house, and he's got a four-wheeler. He can drive me down the hill.
Down to him.
And then drive me back.
Uh-huh.
That sounds pretty good.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah. So the shrooms are coming. And, you know, we got this thing coming up again about selling them to the grocery stores. And no rules against that. If you go out and commercially hunt for them, you can sell them. And I know that some of the grocery stores around here do, in fact, sell them.
Oh, yeah.
And sure I've seen do. $90 a pound on them.
Well, I've heard of $80. They're high.
Pretty high.
Regardless.
We got Dan on the phone. He wants to weigh in on the mushrooms.
Okay. Fire away, Dan.
I bet he found some.
Here, you're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hey, I'm enjoying the discussion. I'm so glad we got away from communicable diseases.
Yeah.
The more pleasant themes. I just want to say one thing about the crazy coronavirus. Don't drink that kind of beer, first of all.
Well, I don't know, man. I can't do without my Corona every once in a while.
Corona beer.
All right. So I heard one thing from all the expert opinions. These two women are talking about this on, I think it's NPR. And one of them is the moderator and the other's from the Centers for Disease Control. And she says, well, you want to stay about 4 feet away from everybody, if you don't want to get this thing. So that's the only advice I'm going to listen to. You stay 4 feet from everybody, you'll be fine.
That's going to be kind of rough to do.
I've been trying.
If you're out in the woods all the time and you never have to get on an airplane or a city bus.
You might be all right.
Or go to a restaurant.
Are you 4 feet from me, Don?
Oh, yeah.
I think.
That's the important thing. Yeah, just stay 4 feet apart. A room or a door between you is even better.
Yeah, I see that as the best solution there.
My plan is 14 miles.
Made any sense. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate that advice. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. But, hey, I wanted to just chime in on the mushroom thing, and I I want you guys to know that I value your opinions way above all those high-paid experts.
Well, thank you.
So I picked up something a few years back from an old woman that had found a bunch of mushrooms.
It wasn't coronavirus, was it?
Long before that, yeah. they had the disease of the month at that time. I think it was 20 years ago. So anyway, she says, yeah, I found a mess of mushrooms out there behind the house. And she says, what I do is I take a bucket of water and make sure it's creek water, not city water, because city water's got chlorine. And she says, I rinse those mushrooms in that bucket, and then I pour the water out wherever I found them, and I'll get more the next year.
I've seen that
happen. That one always caught my attention, because we're basically, you know, reseeding them in a way. I'm not sure it works, but I always liked the idea of it.
I always heard to do that, and I think it does work.
Well, I've heard a lot of things similar to that.
At least with the black variety, the early ones.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Which will be coming up in this month in Indiana. Usually the end of the month.
At the end of the month, yeah. Mm-hmm. Should be.
So it, if it's early,
on the weather,
if it's early this year, you could start looking for them in another couple of weeks.
Mm, right.
So. Hey, paddle faster. I think I hear banjo music.
Yeah, it's time to take a break.
I'll stay on here for a minute.
Okay.
Okay, Dan.
I'll put you on hold, and we will be right back. Right, Bill?
Right. Don't go away, because we got a lot more, whatever this is.
Yeah.
You're listening to Inside Outdoors, brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills of southern Indiana. So hang in there, and we'll be right back with more Inside Outdoors after this short break. You're listening to WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio right here at the John Waldron Arts Center downtown in Bloomington at 91.3 FM for the South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. And you'll know us because we have a mascot from the fire station. This used to be the old fire station a long time ago. Anyway, it's 21 degrees right now, downtown Bloomington, sunny. It's going to be 50 today, 61 on Sunday, mostly sunny also, so nice weekend ahead. Then a chance of showers on through Monday through Wednesday. Looks like highs are going to be somewhere around, floating around 60 degrees, high 50s. So should be pretty nice the next few days. I hope it doesn't get too windy or anything. But that's it from us. We'll be right back.
It ain't a bunch of beans like they serve in the Navy.
Uh-uh. It's bacon and eggs,
biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits and gravy, bacon and eggs, whole pot of coffee down to the dregs. When I get out of bed, my belly begs for biscuits and gravy.
That thing sounded pretty good, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, he's got a dandy now.
Oh, thank you, man, thank you.
That's a lot stronger than the last one.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot better. Got a lot better tune, too.
It's my Russian Jew's harp.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And my wife bought this for me for my birthday this year from Russia.
She's a sweet little lady.
Nice.
Yes, well, she likes to listen to the harp being played, being twanged. She?
Twang, 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 twang.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Dan, still there?
Dan?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that juice. It was a juice harp, and I store mine in orange juice to keep it clean.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good way to
keep the apple juice in the fall, yeah.
Yeah, well, that sounds good.
Yeah, that was some good picking. I enjoyed that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... mushrooms. So I'm watching this thing that's been going on for a few years, and it's the green ash borer gets into those and it's killing them. So these big old ash trees die standing up.
Yeah.
I'm usually looking for them. I don't really know how the thing's spreading and where, but I know it's here. And you know, all you really hear from the DNR is don't carry firewood, and if you do, get the bark off of it. Well, I don't pay attention to that, but I'm watching these ash trees disappear, and I remember that all the biggest yellow morels I ever found were under ash trees, preferably real old ones. And so I'm thinking that, like when the elms were disappearing, there were people were saying they're finding big batches of mushrooms around those dying elms. I think you can see where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Well, that was true. When the elms were, an elm tree was always a good place to find them.
You still find them around dead elm trees.
Yeah, you can find an elm tree.
Yeah.
Yeah,
even around a stump, you're right. I get a rough theory that a tree dies standing, or it falls over, or gets hit by the wind. It's going to be active with mushrooms for a few years, but then whatever's in there that they feed on is going to, you know, rot away, and something else is going to be there. It's going to turn into something that the mushrooms don't feed on. So they're fairly, I'd say, like, the first 3, 4, 5 years, that's when you're going to find the mushrooms. And after that, it's just rotted and there's nothing they're feeding on, I think.
Well, I have found them under or around ash trees also.
Yep.
And not necessarily dead ones. Actually, some large ash trees.
I've always found them around living ash trees, but I'm looking now for places where, if the timber's not being cut or managed, I'm watching what are those trees doing after they die standing up.
Yes, that's, you know, that makes good firewood, and they do that. They get
the best. Yeah, there's nothing finer.
They get a chance to season out.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right.
It may not be the hottest firewood. It's not like a hickory, but it sure burns clean and has a fine ash, so to speak.
And you may not know this, but if you're out there and it's, say, a wet snow, there aren't very many species of trees that will light and start a fire. You can do that with an ash tree when it's green.
Well, I never tried that I know of.
Real hot fire, too.
I know that sassafras has a fire retardant in its bark, so if you've got a sassafras tree, don't try to start a fire with any green sassafras. It's going to be hard.
I've heard stories about that. I'll spare you. But hey, I'll get off the line. I wanted to hear anything you guys know about birds, because I'm always watching them, and I heard you mention last week that the cranes were over at
Goose Pond,
and a while back, I think before Don went to Florida, there was some mention of a place over around Medora where the White River gets, eastward of White River gets pretty wide in the floods. And
Jackson County and over around North Vernon.
Jefferson Proving Ground.
Vernon. Oh, that's further up, okay.
Uh-huh. They've been hanging around there for a few years now. So,
can you tell me any kind of a reference point?
Well,
the road or anything?
I'd say Muscatatuck Wildlife Refuge would probably be a good place to start. So that's got their kind of habitat, and it's right next to the river. So that'd be a good place to look.
Now, is that the one over by Seymour?
Uh huh. Yeah, it's
okay. Over there. Past Seymour. It'd be east of there, right?
Yeah.
Just go out 50.
Yep.
It's an interesting place, and, you know, you can camp in those wildlife refuges if you don't want to have a prepared campsite. And
I don't like prepared campsites.
Well,
get me away from blacktop. That's all I care about.
Well, that's a pretty good place. I used to camp over there now and then. I don't know whether people still do that or not. It's probably not. It's probably too primitive for most campers these days.
I'm all about primitive. Yeah.
Are you a primitive man?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I'm gonna come out of the cave here eventually to recharge the battery.
Seems like everybody needs electricity and water and all that good stuff.
Well, you know, you got a five-gallon jug and a solar panel. You got her. That's it.
Yep, that's all you need.
There was a time when there were no cell phones, and I don't know how people's hearts stayed beating, but they did.
Somehow oh, man.
They made it through that.
Been fighting cell phone towers around Yellowstone for decades already. And, they've got one in there now, and I just can't see them forestalling that pressure to build some more of them. And, you know, that just ruins the entire thing. You're out there fishing in the wilderness, and you've driven thousands of miles to get there, and you want to see wildlife and hear wildlife, and here you got a phone ringing behind you on the creek.
Now that I've got a cartoon somewhere from the New Yorker, that's got the park ranger standing there, and there's a fork in the trail, and there's a man and a woman walking up to him, and he says, "If you go this way, the cell phone reception is better."
Yeah.
Well,
that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, well, here's to no more cell phone towers for Don. I'm sorry. They put them up all over the place out here north of town.
Oh, so they're everywhere.
I can't look out there without seeing red lights up in the air.
They're everywhere.
Don, you'd like this. I've started a school. It's called the Hoosier Institute of Low Technology.
Oh, well, we ought to be good for that.
Well, we need instructors, so if you guys aren't busy, we'll figure out some time. Maybe find a church basement or something. We'll have seminars.
I think that'd be good. We have
pay attention is his first seminar.
I got the building.
Yeah, Bill's got the handy meeting
house. We're in business.
All right.
Got the building so we can make fire by friction there. And
yeah.
All kinds of stuff.
We're going to have a seminar on operating a shovel.
Oh, operating a shovel?
About a week to get through to most people. But. Hey, I hear the phone ringing. I'm going to get off. Thanks, gentlemen.
Okay. Take it easy, Dan.
Right. Have a good day.
Okay.
You know, he was asking about birds.
Uh-huh.
I got a, you know, that tornado they had down there in
Nashville?
Yes. That's terrible.
Well, apparently, and it is terrible, it really did some damage down there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 29 people, wasn't it? Or 24 people killed around Nashville.
And it went right through the center of town, kind of. Even a venue, a big music venue got hit. And But anyway, they say a bunch of vultures have descended on North Nashville.
Oh, well, are they from New York?
Yeah, they're, as the residents were searching through the wreckage of their homes, there were predatory investors offering cash settlements right there, right now, for your property that showed up down there. So the carpetbagger is still alive and well.
I'll be darned.
In Tennessee.
I believe it. I believe about anything anymore.
speaking of birds, yesterday had a mockingbird at our suet feeder, which we just don't have mockingbirds around our house generally.
Is that your wife?
No.
No, it was a
It
a
was
bird.
A real bird.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. And I thought maybe she was mocking you.
And it was beat up. You know, it was. Oh. It obviously got sent up here, like with lots of other birds, in that storm that went across
Good
the
head.
South.
Right.
And it knocked them off of their usual flyway. Migration had started, and here they come, and bam, all of a sudden, we had that raft of redhead ducks over at Stone Lake Apartments over there. And I don't suppose I've seen five redhead ducks at Lake Monroe my entire life. And there was 100 of them out there.
I'll be darned.
They were clearly blown off by the storm. And that happens a lot. So you want to keep your eyes peeled after any kind of event like that when the migration's taking place, because you're going to see some birds you don't usually see.
Right. Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to see those strangers show up. We've had the bluebirds around a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the usual, the pileated woodpecker.
Yeah, the humiliating, yeah.
And all the other woodpeckers and juncos.
Oh, them beautiful birds, I'll tell you what.
They are
beautiful.
And did you know that each woodpecker has its own rhythm?
Uh-huh.
And
sure does.
If you listen long enough and make note of it enough, you can tell the difference between them by hearing their peckers out in the woods.
Yeah, you can name them Elmer and Jackson and whatever.
That's
and
right.
You can tell by their pecker.
That's right.
When they peck.
That's boy, right. They definitely can.
Yes, sir. It's a different, each one has their own.
Well, our pileated come and hang on the bottom of those little cages, those little suet cages. Uh-huh. And it's just incredible how determined they are to get at that
stuff.
You'd think that they would have a hard time hanging there, but
they
can hang there a long time.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's a real good thing to put up if you want to see woodpeckers. Those pileated woodpeckers live right here in town. It's not like they're just in the country. We have a lot of them here. A lot of places never see them, but, boy, we have them. We have them.
I think, a little more all the time.
I believe we are. Yeah. At least
they're hatching out and staying here. And
at least surviving. They're around. Well, all the ash trees, that gives them a
place to go.
Hunt food and make holes.
Sure does.
A pileated woodpecker makes a very unique hole in a tree. It's an oblong hole. I'd say can be anywhere from about 4 or 5 inches to a couple of feet. And it's usually vertical on the side of the trunk. They're fairly narrow, just wide enough for their head, but they can be fairly long up and down the side of the tree, kind of a rectangular shape. So if you see a hole like that, you've got a pileated woodpecker.
Yeah, right? Somewhere around.
That's right. They can make the chips fly.
Yeah, they
definitely
sure can.
So that's a good thing to watch for.
I was going to say, if you don't hear them on the side of your house, you're probably all right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. That's true.
They will.
But they will do that, too.
They will do that. If you've got any wooden windowsills or wooden doors on your house.
Oh, wood siding.
Wood siding. them suckers, I mean, they'll hang on the side where you think they ain't going to.
Yes.
Ain't no way possible.
And the little ones, the little hairy woodpeckers, they're the worst at that. I mean, they will just riddle the siding on your house. They're not very big holes, but they put them in there.
It'd be nothing but a pile of splinters.
As a matter of fact, my wife had one tip on her old house and made a hole big enough for the squirrels to get in. And then they had a squirrel problem in the house. So, well, woodpecker leads to a squirrel problem. You know, that's time to do something.
Yeah, that's time to do something, that's for sure, yeah.
What do you hear about fishing, Bill? Anybody fishing? No.
You know, I've seen a couple of boats go down, but I haven't talked to anybody that's actually fished. I don't know where them boats was going or coming from. Maybe I
don't know either. Well, that reminds me. I've been looking up, find some information on West Boggs Creek, you know, one of our old fishing holes. And it turns out that now West Boggs Creek also runs the campground at Glendale Fish and Wildlife Area. And I don't know whether you've ever been to that campground down there, but it used to be, it's fairly good size and it had lots of room between the trailers. Mm-hmm. Well, there's now, I'd say, three times as many campsites in that same space. And the campsites are plotted on their map just like one of those big KOAs down in Florida. So it's a whole different atmosphere there now than it used to be. And also at West Boggs, they've added a bunch of campgrounds. They have that whole one side of the lake is covered with campgrounds now where you come in and go to the right. So we got a kind of a commercial operation taking over state land there. I've never been in favor of that, but, some people are, I guess.
The state-run bogs?
No, that's a private.
I was thinking.
That's run by the park department down in Davies County.
Davies County, okay. That's what I thought, but I can't keep them all straight.
The state has renovated that lake three times now, drained it, killed off the carp and the whatevers and the shiners, and restocked it. Now, I don't know who paid for that. I've never had any. I've asked that question many times on this show. Nobody's ever come up with an answer.
I don't have any idea either.
I heard one time that it cost $1 million to redo one of those lakes. And
probably does.
There's a lot of effort involved in that. So I'm just curious, did they get the profits for all this now? Or
I thought the state done it once.
Well, they did it three. They've done it three times.
The state itself?
Yeah. DNR done that all three times. And the last time it was because of shad in there. And I understand there's crappie in there now, which there didn't used to be crappie in there. Crappie and bluegill usually don't mix because the crappie will outcompete the bluegill eventually. And you'll have some real small crappie and better, or real small bluegills, I mean, and better crappies. So that was a tremendous bluegill hole at one time.
At one time, that was the bluegill capital of the state.
It was really good. It was right up there with Lake Griffey, which is another one that's kind of suffered over the years.
Yeah, it's really suffered, too, due to the fact of human error.
Well, people taking too many fish out of there.
Human error.
We still do not have a limit on bluegill in this state.
Nope, you're not going to get one either.
I don't think. I don't know why. I don't know why that the people are why they're against that up in Indianapolis.
I can't answer that either. I have no idea why.
I'd say somebody on the DNR board has always liked to go out and catch 250 bluegills and feed their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So anyway, that's the story on that. We got. We got other places to bluegill fish in Indiana, but boy, those are two of the best.
Yeah, them was two of the best.
And Glendale.
Around here, anyway.
Glendale has been good in the past.
In the past.
For red ear and bluegill. So, I don't know. You know, they allow bass boats on there now.
Yeah.
You know, with your 250 horse. You can't run your motor, but you can have that 250 on there. And they do get fired up and run, you know, when nobody's around.
Nobody looking.
Yeah. So anyway, things are changing in that regard. And
there's a lot of things changing.
They sure are.
Music's changing.
We're getting older than, older by the day.
Oh, older by the minute and by the day. Yes, sirree, Bob.
But it's sure been fun, Bill.
Yep. It's been fun today. Yes,
another one went by. And
another one went by.
Well, we're going to see y'all next week, I guess, since I hear the music.
Yeah, we're going to have to get out of here. So
well, today's a good day to get out there and go hiking and do something. It's going to be 50 degrees and sunny. So, bye-bye.
So we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.